Good morning, and welcome to part two. This is, also told us, don't worry, but it is primarily Chaye Sara that we're going to be looking at. Last time, we started the discussion about racism with an eye towards addressing why it is that Abraham is not going to allow Yitzhak to marry a girl from Canaan. So we started out with these quotes from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, saying in a very straightforward way that there's no such thing as a biological preference for a particular race within Judaism or looking down on others based on biology. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky tackles the question of Arur Canaan and says that it's that Canaan is going to teach his descendants bad behavior, and that's why they get this curse, and it's not about their biology. He's rather adamant about that based on the Gemara. He didn't make it up. But we noted the difference between bias based on race and bias based on religion, where it may be true that from a race perspective there's no bias. There is a bias, though, towards people who share the brit, who share the covenant with us. That doesn't mean that we are better than them. The Or HaChaim that we quoted from the beginning of Parshas Yisro, who says that that we are given the laws of courts in the context of by Yisro in order to teach specifically that non-Jews can be brilliant and have great ideas and win Nobel Prizes and so forth. There's nothing better about a Jew per se. Our preference for Jews in certain areas is about them being family and part of the bridge, part of the covenant. So then we asked, so what exactly is racism? And we first spent some time defining race itself. I'm not going to reopen that. But we said there are two different components, and here I wanted to revisit what we had said, because I think it needed some refining. We had said there are two kinds of racism. One is judging an individual member of a race based on traits that are assumed to belong to the race in general. I meet somebody who is Japanese and I assume certain things about them. I meet somebody who is fill in the blank with whatever ethnicity you want. I'm deliberately omitting Jewish because we're not discussing whether Judaism is a race or a religion. But the answer, of course, being both. But the assumption that if I meet a representative of a particular race, they must have certain traits because that's what the race has. That is one kind of racism. And then there is the explicitly degrading form of racism where you say people from that race have negative traits. They must be, and fill in the blank, again, with whatever negative trait you want to identify. They are unintelligent, they are greedy, they are, you know, whatever it is. And what we said is the former kind, assuming race-based traits as a function of biology, I think is found in Judaism. And this is the part that I wanted to clarify from last time, because I was thinking about it afterwards, and I thought what I had said was not quite correct. So I want to make sure to say it properly. I think Judaism does that. The example of the Persian bear is, I think, very clear in that regard, and I think it's basic biology. Meaning the idea that there are predispositions based on genetics to have particular features, to look a certain way, and biological elements which affect more than just the way one looks, I think that's something people come to based on observation. You see certain things and you generalize in certain ways, and we may not always like it. But I think that's there within Judaism, even as we're told to value people based on merit and not based on whatever traits they're born into. It's about what they do. The latter kind, though, assuming negative traits as a default for a race as a function of biology, is where Judaism parts ways with racism. In other words, there is the idea, as Yaakov Kamenetsky said, that a culture creates certain traits. There are things that are taught that become a problem culturally. That we did find in the Canaan case. However, when it comes to assuming that people are just by dint of their genes somehow defective, that's where Judaism draws the line, and we saw that in the statements about Tzelem Elokim, saying that all human beings are in the image of God. You can't then assume that there's a defect in them. We saw it in the statements about Ethiopian Jewry, and I thought that was that was something that didn't come out clearly last time, but I hope, you know, we'll play with it as well and what we're going to talk about today. But that's your brief recap. Clear? Okay. So that brings us to the problem of Hayesara and Toldos, which is, so why won't Abraham let Yitzchak marry a Canaanite? Now, in order to really understand why this is a problem, we have to do away with ideas that are simply wrong. Okay? You can't say that Abraham's decision, don't let him marry a Canaanite, is because Canaanim have a bad culture. And that's all there is to it.
Isn't there like also like the famous thing about, because like they were going to live with them, so like you couldn't extract her?
We'll see that a little bit of version of that in a couple of the Mefarshim. So that idea that if they're going, it depends on what you mean. There are two different ways I can take what you're saying, and both.
I was treating it also like last week what you said about the in-laws. Like, take a girl from New York because they're going to live in Toronto. So like, it doesn't matter what the in-laws are like in New York, but if they live around the corner, they have to be more careful because like she's going to always be in their house.
Right. So I'm going to come back to that. No, it's, in all seriousness, we're going to come back to that. It's what you're thinking of is an idea that's found in the Kliyakar. The Kliyakar says that, so we will come back to that. But first, let's make the question worse, and then come to some answers. First of all, I think we noted last time the Arameans are not any good. It's not like you're saying my son has to marry a really good girl. So, no Canaanites allowed. I know. How about, Aram? Because Arameans are just wonderful. It was, Hashem told Abram, leave them behind, right? Lavan as a representative of that family, of course, Lavan at this stage is not the patriarch of the family. It's Bethuel who was the
father. They're related to Abram, technically.
Yeah, they're related to Abram, and it doesn't seem to really do much.
Right,
so they're bad, might as well go with family. I know people who would specifically say the opposite.
Right, true.
But you could debate how well does Abraham know them, unclear. They do produce Rivka, Rachel, Leah, right, according to some, Bilhah and Zilpah as well. So the truth of the matter is there are good ones who come out of them, but it's just like, leaving behind Canaan in order to get Aram doesn't seem like a whole great bargain here. That's number one. But number two, and stronger, Abraham and Sarah have been doing what in Canaan?
Oh, Kiruv.
Right? But Kiruv is a funny word to use in this context, right? It's Gerus.
Yeah.
Right? They're preaching all about God, right? Can you imagine? Like, they're teaching all these people, and the men and women are showing up, and one of them hears Abraham say, don't let Yitzchak marry one of them, right? I mean, that's what happens,
right?
That's what you're talking about. All these people who Abraham is converting now will not, Yitzchak can't marry them.
Yeah, like, no, it's not like a public thing.
Oh, so it's okay because he didn't tell them in front of them.
It comes back. Something wrong. Like, what was wrong with all of us?
Right. Not to mention, take a look at the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah in Source 12. Abram is speaking to his Eved, right? We assume the Eved is Eliezer, although he's not named in the Parsha. Asher lo sikachi shalivni, right? That you shall not take a wife for my son. His hero shalo yelech el benos aner eshkol umamre. He's telling him, sorry, it's number 12 in the...
I thought they're his friends.
Right, they are his friends. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't want Yitzchak marrying... water. It's really not a problem.
I put out the napkin and I forgot that.
It's really fine. Thanks. Because Abraham says to the Eved, don't take a wife for Yitzchak from the people Asher Anochi Yoshev Bekirbo. From the people in whose midst I am living. Right? Don't take from the one in whose midst I am living. So that's Aner Eshkol Umamre. So now you're really raising it, because Aner Eshkol Umamre are the good guys. They're the ones who are close with him, the whole thing in the Medrash about the bris. Not only that, jump ahead to a Medrash we're not quite ready for yet, but I want you to see a piece of it in number 15. We're going to come back to this Medrash, but just see the Medrash itself very simply. This is on the section in the Chumash after the Akedah. You know, you have that weird passage where after the Akedah is over and Avram goes back to Beersheba, word comes to Avraham that his brother Nahor has a family. And whoa, does he have a family. A whole bunch of kids are born. Right? The kids and grandkids, obviously not all at once. But the this is the origin of the Medrash that that Rivka was three at the well, because the this along with the Medrash that Sarah dies right at the time of the Akedah, combining those two leads us to this conclusion that Rivka was three. But leaving aside Rivka being three, the let's bite off only one piece at a time. The this passage doesn't seem to belong. This whole story of the lineage of Nahor's family doesn't seem to fit. So the Medrash says it's here because Hashem specifically lets Avraham know about Nahor's kids at this stage in time. It was after the Akedah. But the wording is had devarim ha'ele. Achar hir hurei devarim shahayusham. After the thoughts that were there. Avram had certain thoughts. What does that mean? Mimaharher. Who was thinking? Avram was thinking. Avram here. Omar. Ilu meis bahar ha-moria. He said, had Yitzchak died at the Akedah, lo haya meis below banim, wouldn't he have died without children? That's it. Line would have been over. Avshav ma'es. So what should I do now? Asiyan mibinos aner eshkolu mamre shehenet zidkaniyot. Let me marry him off to someone from Aner Eshkol Mamre. These are righteous women. What do I care that they should have a great lineage? And Hashem says to him, Einatat Tzarich, you don't have to do that. Don't worry about it. Karnola Zugo Shal Yitzchak. Yitzchak's mate is already born. Hine Yolda Milka Gam Hi, and so on.
What does that mean? What do I care for lineage? It doesn't sound like, you know, the type of personality of Abraham. Like, it just doesn't match.
So the idea of lineage in general, if you're going back to Bereishis Rabbah as well as in the Gemara, is seen as a way to protect yourself from a family in which impropriety has taken place. A family that's not miuchas, that doesn't have its lineage known, is a family that could have mamzerim in there, things like that, that Abraham would like to, you know, at least in the eyes of this Medrash here, would like to avoid.
But like, there's no such thing as
yichus
then. Like, he's the first Jew. Like,
yeah. What do you mean when you use the word yichus? When you think of yichus, I don't think of it narrowly. Think of it more broadly. Mamzerus has never been a good thing. You know, in a culture in which the people are supposed to be loyal to their spouses, you know, that doesn't speak well for a family. There are certain values there beyond any sort of statement of halacha.
So it's like upstanding.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, I would read it, the word miyuchas is a word that gets drawn in different directions. I would read miyuchas here as their yichus is known, their lineage is known, and everything is above board and okay, which is the way miyuchas is often used. That's the way I would take it. It's not about they come from my family, necessarily, although that is Hashem's answer to him. Hashem's answer to him is, don't worry about it, Nahor has kids. But the point that I'm bringing this medrash for is not the yichus point. The point I'm bringing this medrash for is that he says the daughters of an Eresh Kolon Mamre are tzidkaniyot. So now I really don't understand. You can't marry your daughter off to a Kanani, right? If you're willing to say it's because Kananim have bad behavior, well, an Eresh Kolon Mamre's daughters are tzidkaniyot. This really does sound like a race thing at this point, right? That's the problem. So we have six different approaches to see, but don't worry, it'll all be clear. That's an interesting question. Someone asked me, someone had emailed me a couple of weeks ago, asking me that they read about Aaron's marriage to Hagar being a test, according to the Rambam's list of the 10 tests, and they couldn't understand why would that be. And my answer to them, I think, works for this as well. What is being tested? When Avram has tests, what is actually being tested?
His loyalty to God.
His loyalty to God? Loyalty is almost the right word. Sorry?
Emunah.
Which is a combination of trust and loyalty. Trust, belief that what God says is going to come true, and loyalty, a willingness to conduct one's life on that basis. Things happen to Abraham that make him wonder, is all this really going to come true? Is everything Hashem promised going to come true? So the Akedah, obviously, Hashem promised me an heir who's going to produce a line, and now he's telling me to kill him. The requirement, not the requirement, but the command of that Sarah gives, not just take Hagar as a concubine, but actually marry her, has to be a test also, because he's been told that Sarah is going to produce a child with him, and now he's going to go marry somebody else in order to have a child. That also has to test his confidence that what Hashem says is going to come true. So anything that presents a risk to the fulfillment of Hashem's promises is one of the tests. The issue of who is Yitzchak going to marry and finding a good wife for him, I suppose could be, I don't know if it's on any of the lists of 10, but if it fits that model, then it's a test of Abraham. Okay. So yeah, we're going to see six different approaches here. So let's see what we can do with it. By the way, I added something at the bottom of the sheet. These are the same sheets as last time, except that I added some translations and a source, but also I added review questions at the end. So that this is not a test. You're not getting graded. If anyone wants to fill them out and send them to me, I can ignore them. It's something I started doing in some of my classes because I feel like it helps. First of all, it helped me when I construct it to make sure that I actually get to the point and answer the questions. But also, I think it helps, when you're participating in a shiur to have questions that you think about, like, okay, so what is the answer here? Okay. So, approach number one. This is the most basic approach, which I think people often assume, which is that, yeah, there is an element of racism here. That the curse given to Canaan ends up rendering their descendants in some way arur, inferior, cursed. Take a look at source number 13, where Radak sounds like that. Mibnos ha-Kana'ani, ki zera Kana'an arur, vizar'o baruch. The seed of Canaan is cursed. Avram's descendants are blessed, right? Hashem gives them bracha. Lo yisareiv zera baruch ba'arur. You don't want the blessed one to be mixed with the cursed one. You could still satisfy Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's position with this and say it's not about their biological material. It's about the curse that Noach gave them, or it's about the bad education they passed to their kids. Like, you can still sort of make that work if you have to. But even if Radak isn't saying a form of race-based, biology-based inferiority, the truth of the matter is that you have to acknowledge that particularly in Kabbalah, you find a view that analyzes people's neshamos based on their biology. That the Kuzari is probably the best known example of it, although he precedes a lot of the Kabbalistic works that build on it. But the idea that there's something special about the neshama of Adam, and that the lineage that we find recorded, that yichus, that we find recorded in the Chumash, is of those who had what was special about Adam passed down to them. So that line has a special character, a special trait to them, and that goes down to Noah, and then it goes down to Abram, and it goes to us, and it's unique and special. And that others don't have it. It's not quite biology. It's spiritual biology, if you will. But take a look at source number 14, where I brought you a piece from the Kuzari.
Where's the Kuzari from? Is that Stas, or?
The Kuzari is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, who wrote it in Spain. Yeah, he was in Spain. He ultimately made Aliyah at the end of his life. Whether he made it there, didn't make it there, is a bit unclear. The story of him getting trampled is probably not true. But Rabbi Yehuda Halevi writes it in Spain.
Is this mixed in with the idea of
mazel? So, depends how literal you are with the word mazel. What do you mean when you say mazel?
Like somebody's, I guess, I mean, the English translation of it would be like destiny, or more like that we believe that.
I wouldn't necessarily incorporate that. I don't think. Yeah, there are different aspects to mazel, but I don't see really how that would connect. I don't know. But Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was asked, the Chaver, representing Judaism, was asked how old the world is in the count of Judaism. And look at what he says. Amar Chaver, Arbaz Alafim V'Chamesh Meos. He says the world is now 4,500 years old. Upratamavu Armimos Adam V'Sheis V'Enosh Ad Noach. He says, go through the generations, Adam, Shais, Enosh, all the way down to Noach, Shem, Ve'eber, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe. Ve'ele mipnei hischav rusam hayulev Adam usgulaso. Ulocholachad mehem hayubanos kiklifos. Einam domum lavos. I forgot that was the piece I quoted in the Kuzari. It's what I just told you about. The idea that those generations are special. That's the problem when you prepare something too far in advance. But then you can see it. They had kids who were like klipot, shells. They're not like their ancestors, and they don't have the divine element adhering to them, and they're not part of this spiritual clan until you get to Yaakov, where he has the 12 Shvatim, and they all have this special attribute. So you have to acknowledge, I think, that there is something which sounds race based within this school. Like, to pretend that that's not in Judaism at all, I think is a mistake. That said, we got five other approaches regarding Abraham's statement. So approach number two is God said so. Bless you.
Thank you.
Approach number two is simply to say, yes, you're right. Abraham said, don't marry a Canaanite. But it wasn't a function of race for him. It was just God told him to. And that's that medrash that we talked about. Now you see it in number 15, right? Where the medrash says that Hashem says to him, no, don't marry a local righteous woman. Abram would have been fine doing that. However, Hashem said, I have a better idea for you. And the idea for you is to send for a bride from the family who will end up being Rivka, and Rivka is wonderful, and that was what Hashem had in mind. So it's not about race at all. It's about God told me to do this, and that makes sense. This actually fits really nicely with something that we said here in a shir, I think, a few years ago. And it's a Tolos Tritara. Some people really want a Tolos Tritara. We talked about this a couple of years ago. The idea that Rivka is special. Remember that in the beginning of Parashas Toldos, she's having this pregnancy and she's all upset and she doesn't know what's going on. And she goes, Lidroshes Hashem, to ask God what's wrong. And the response that she gets is, don't worry, Rivka. There are two kids inside you. They're going to grow up to be nations. They're going to fight with each other. The older one is going to have to serve the younger one. And Rivka goes home and says, oh, I feel so much better. Why did that make her feel better? Right? On what planet is that something you want to hear? But the idea that I had suggested, and again, it was a whole shiur that we did, was that the key in the whole back and forth between Rivka and what she hears from God is her personal role. Remember, she's been living off in Aram, minding her own business, whether she's 3 years old or 12 years old, however old she is, and suddenly, from Canaan, this fellow comes with a whole bunch of jewelry and whatever else, and says, you'll never believe what happened. I was talking to God, and God said, the woman who's going to say these words, that's the one who I'm supposed to bring back as a bride for my master's son. And you said those words, and you're from the family. You're the one God has picked, right? And you're Rivka. Like, yeah. Okay, I guess God picked me. I must be special in some way. And then she adopts that narrative, like that she is supposed to be the one who's going to make things happen. Like when they ask her the next day, "Are you sure you want to go? Maybe you should wait a while." She says, "Eleich, I'm going to go." But now she goes for 20 years and she's unable to have a child, and she's got to be wondering, right? The same way Sarah, you know, wondered, maybe it's not me, maybe there's something wrong. And then she becomes pregnant, but there's something weird going on inside. And she says, in Cain, lama ze anochi, which is a very hard phrase to translate grammatically, but the way I'm reading it now, if so, why me? I think I saw part of this in an essay. I think it was Yael Ziegler from Bar-Ilan. I think that was where I saw part of this. She says, why me? Meaning, am I really special? Is this really... am I the one in this role? To which the answer that she gets is, Shnei goyim bivitneich. Two nations are in your room. Shnei leomim mimeayich yiparedu. Two nations are going to come from you, meaning, yeah, it's you. You're the one who is supposed to be the one to carry this forward, which is why she has the confidence that when Yitzchak's going to give the bracha to Esav, she says, nothing doing, it's going to Yaakov. And Yaakov says, you know, I could get in a lot of trouble for this. And what does she say? Alai kilalascha b'ni. It's on me, because she understands, I am here, this is my role, this is who I'm supposed to be. That's, you know, that's in a nutshell, you know, Rivka's sense that it really is about her. And now I'm just thinking, to bring it back to this, that this connects very well with this Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah, that Avram is fully willing to go with a righteous daughter of Aner. And Hashem says, no, I have something else in mind. It's going to be Rivka. So I like that. Okay, good. Connects well. Hold us to our Torah. Check. Those are our first two answers. Your first answer is, yes, there's a race issue. Ala Radak Kuzari. Second answer is, no, Hashem had a plan in mind, and Hashem told him, this is who I want you to marry. And by the way, this is also the answer that some give regarding the other race problem in the Torah, which is Amalek. Right? How in the world, if you don't believe in a biological issue, how can you support wiping out Amalek? There are a variety of answers. We talked about this last year in Parashas B'Shalach. But one answer is to say, you're right, this seems inconsistent, but God said so. Right? In the same way that God contradicts his own commands various times in the Torah. Right? Hashem says, observe Shabbos, don't light a fire on Shabbos. Oh, by the way, on Shabbos, bring the following karbanos. Right? That involves Shechita, that involves a fire, and so on. Yeah. God said so. That's the way it is. Hashem says, don't wear shatnez, except the clothing of the Kohen is actually going to involve woolen linen.
But it isn't supposed to be more problematic because it's like a public story, right? Like, don't wear shatnez story doesn't affect someone who's not Jewish, but for people to walk around saying that you're racist affects
yes.
Globally.
Correct. Correct. But I think you have to be honest about what's involved, and Malik is a problem. You know, I'd love to give just like nice Divrei Torah that don't touch on that, but I think it's reality.
But it's just not an easy answer to tell someone like, oh, well, we just...
God says so.
That
yeah, no, absolutely, because there are a whole bunch of terrorists who also say God says so.
Yeah,
I'm well aware.
Right.
Approach number three says it's not about race. It's about the immediate impact of current misbehavior on Yitzchak. Meaning it's not about their past, it's not about what's going to be in the future, but it's about the behavior that's going to be learned here, either from her or from, and this can take us back to Dasi's point, her family. From her, Rabbeinu Bachaye in source number 16 mentions a minhag that I've never seen, but apparently exists. He says, L'fisha isha mukhenes lepuranus tateh ha'adam letzita. He says, if a woman is predisposed for punishment, meaning that if she has bad behavior, she is going to incline the man to follow her. He will become like her. Do that what you will. Because that's what Chava did. She ate from the fruit. She gave to Adam to eat from the fruit. Yes, this passage deserves some discussion at some point.
We're very happy to
have that. As happened with Shlomo, with the foreign women he married, and that whole story. I never heard of this. The minhag that you should have the chasan read this, or read it to him on the day of the wedding. He should read Parshas Chayei Sara. And specifically not to marry a Canaanite. What happens if he did?
It's too late.
It's too late now. He should have done this at the beginning of dating. This should be. Alright. But that is one idea, that she will be the influence. And then the other idea is the Kliyakar's idea, which Dasi mentioned, which is we're concerned about family influence. The Kliyakar says in number 17, Omar, Pshita Misa Ish Bini Isha Mibna Saknani Miachashanochi Yoshe Bikirbo Mistama Gambini Yagoretzlam. He's playing on this Anochi Yoshe Bikirbo. Don't let him marry somebody among whom I am living. So he says, it's obvious to Avraham that if he marries a local girl, they're going to live near each other, right? It's going to be Toronto. Everybody's going to live on the same block. So, and therefore there is a concern that he'll learn from the in-laws. And if he marries a girl from there and lives there, then he'll learn from the Arameans. We don't like that either. But if he marries a girl from there and he lives in Canaan, then there's no concern. Right? The alternative would have been to marry a Canaani and go move there, but Yitzchak's supposed to live in Israel, right? That's the land that's been given to them. Bonus, the Canaanim are going to hate him for having married a girl from elsewhere. What's the matter? The local girls weren't enough. You had to go find somebody from somewhere else. So that's the idea of the Kliyak. Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch brings an idea like that as well. There are problems with this answer. Right? There are problems with the idea that it's about influence. First of all, because we said the daughters of Aner Eshkol and Mamre are great. Right? But also, then why does it have to be a girl from Aram? Let it be a girl from Egypt.
Right.
The point is only get a girl from somewhere. Get a girl whose family we will never have to see.
Yeah.
Right? That's what Abraham is saying, according to the Kliyakar. So, okay, doesn't need to be Aram. So, but those are our first three options. It is race-based. God told him to because Hashem wants it to be Rivka, or influence from either her or from her family. The last three answers I like more. All of those are good answers with solid, credentials behind them. But I think there's more to be said here, and it's about what happens when Yitzchak gets married. And again, tied into Toldos, the same thing is true regarding Yaakov. Right? Because at the end of Toldos, Rivka says to Yitzchak, don't let Yaakov marry a local girl. Right? What's Rivka's agenda? Why does Rivka say that? Why does Rivka say to Yitzchak, don't let Yaakov marry a local girl?
She wants to go back to Shadley.
No, the child, straight pasuk, Esav, right? He's going to get killed. Esav's going to kill him. She wants an excuse to get Yaakov out of the house. So she says to Yitzchak, these local women are terrible. Let him go back to my family to find a wife. But Yitzchak doesn't know that's going on. So when Yitzchak says to Yaakov, your mother said, don't marry a local girl, better go somewhere else, it's because Yitzchak buys into what you're seeing in Chayei Sarah. So whatever we're seeing here is part of Yitzchak's cheshbon, is part of Yitzchak's plan as well for Yaakov. So what is it that happens with this marriage? So you can look at it on three levels. Level number one is creating a stable home, right? They're creating what will be the next phase of the Jewish people. Level number two is that you are perpetuating a nation, which has other elements to it. And level number three is going to be you're passing along a bequest, the identity of the Jewish people, but particularly their stake in Israel is all being passed along here. And for all of those reasons, he doesn't want a Canaanite. First of all, he wants to create a stable home. So look at Rabbeinu Bachaye. This is always interesting. He quotes Yehuda Gemara and Pesachim to support his idea. He says, "Va'od yesh parsha zuas hara la'adam sheyisa isham mibnos mishpachto v'sheyidbak bekrovosav kichein asa Avraham v'chein Amram." He says, "This parsha acts as a warning. You should marry from your family." He's not evidently so concerned about the genetics of this. He says you should marry from your family, you should marry your relatives, because that's what Abraham did, that's what Amram did. Kikshabrios Mizdavgos kol echad ve'echad el mino hashalom miskayem umisrabeh ba'olam. He says if you marry among your kind, there will be greater peace. Then what does he mean by your kind? He doesn't really mean family per se, but he means people with your status. Because if he marries a woman who is from a lower status within society, it could be he's going to become arrogant, and in the end, he will come to shame because of the way he treats her. And if he marries up, then she'll be arrogant over him. They'll be fighting. And so he quotes you the Gemara in Pesachim, which you've heard on various occasions, where the Gemara says about families that are similar, that that adhere to each other, that it works out really well when they are similar. So what you want to create here is a stable home, and the home of a marriage from within the family is going to be more peaceful.
I think we've adopted this in today's day and age. It doesn't sound very unusual, but when you look inside a shidduch, you look for similarities, or that's usually what. I think so.
Well, I'm Ashkenazi or Sephardi or Hebrew or vice versa. You know,
it's not very common. I mean, I don't want to sound like, but.
I come at this from a different direction because I come from a world in which the kids find whoever they find and the parents just, you know, daven. I definitely think that there is something to be said for what he's saying, even as I would wonder about a little bit of sort of stultification of society if families are always going to be looking for someone who's like them. I think that there's a danger involved in that as well. Then again, you know, I haven't married off a kid yet, and so I'm talking in theory. And theory is very different from reality.
It's worked till now, so.
Which has worked till now?
Their stultification theory hasn't really, like I'm saying, that hasn't happened.
Is that true? I mean, I haven't done a study of families in which, you know, people have married alike and versus, you know, where they haven't. So I can't, I'm guessing.
So now people for sure marry more alike. They marry within their own shtetl.
A genetic a lot more wrap-up genes.
You're not talking about it at a genetic level. You're not talking about
it. No, not at a genetic level. I'm talking about, I mean, probably people did marry more closely.
They did, and that's why we have certain problems. But I think it's an interesting question. I don't think it's a simple answer. I suspect the answer really is it depends on the people involved. There are some people who are better suited for a marriage across statuses, which I should also note, because you mentioned Ashkenaz Sephard, that's not really the point that he's making. The point he's making is social status. How are you going to look at the person you're marrying? Is a prince, what is, not prince and the pauper, Cinderella type of a situation where one of them is royal and one of them is not, right? That's really more of his concern than Ashkenaz and Sephard. Right. I mean, he's certainly not talking about religious status because, again, Aram is way off from where Abram's family is. So religious differences are not really the focus. It's social status. That seems to be the focus. And the idea then is that somehow, I don't know how, but Nahor's family is known to be socially roughly where Abram's family is. How would they know that? I have no idea. I mean, Abram's family is well respected. Abram goes to Hebron and they say, Nisi Elokim Atah B'Socheinu, and, you know, I don't know anything about Nahor's family in Aram and how respected they are. It's an assumption, though, that Rebbe Nevachaya is making here. The next level is perpetuating a nation. So again, we're still trying to answer this question of why you wouldn't take a righteous Canaanite. So our fourth answer is stable home. They're from the same status, and making the assumption that Nahor really is of the same status. The next idea, though, is perpetuating a nation. Rabbeinu Nissim, the Ran, says this, and his idea is so beloved to people. He gets quoted by Abarbanel, Kliyakar, Ksaba Kabbalah, the Malbim. They love this idea. I'm not so sold. Take a look. Number 19. I happen to love the Drashas Haran. I think that there's amazing Torah in there. I just have a problem with this one. He says, Dabar Baruch Hu. He says, it is absolutely clear. Ki kamosha halechut po'alot, halechut po'alot b'midot. He says, fluids affect one's traits. And what he's talking about is the theory of humors. Right? The idea that within the body there are fluids, and there's black bile, and this kind of bile, or whatever, and they affect the person's moods. That they're driven by biology. Kein hamidos po'alos b'lechos. So too, a person's traits affect the fluids, the humors, within their body. If the humors affect your mood, then your mood affects your humor. That in and of itself, taking that for the moment, is basic biology. Meaning we know this to be true. That biology affects your mood, but also that mood will affect biology. Stress causes all sorts of reactions within the body. So that piece of it is clear. He says, he has it obviously with the biology of his day, which is, I think, 14th century. Ki kamoshu mechuyav, shemishi adam libo cham roteach, shia muchana lakas. He says, just like it has to be that somebody whose heart has boiling blood, so that person is more likely to be angry. So too, somebody who is always angry creates a cycle. His blood, his heart is going to heat up, and he will be more likely to become angry in the future. It's a cycle. And he says that's true for all spiritual traits. Spiritual here, he means like emotional traits. That's what he's talking about. So he says, somebody who is accustomed to these traits, he inclines his nature to be sort of predisposed to those traits. And generally speaking, that is inherited. Children's biological nature is like that of their parents. This is sort of a Lamarckian evolution idea, right? Remember that, the Lamarck's idea, right? That the giraffes have long necks because they have to reach up and get to the branches, and therefore their offspring will have even longer necks because that's, you know, what the parents had, and that's the...
dark skin as well. Right,
because
they lived in hot climates and their skin.
I mean,
and then all of a sudden now it's natural.
Right. This idea. I mean, it's clearly pseudoscience, but it was a dominant theory for a while about how genetics worked. That yeah, if you do certain things, then your kids are going to inherit. I mean, it's nonsense. On its face, it's nonsense. Right. Yeah, I'm not even going there. It's not important. the point that we're bringing here is that the Ron is, you know, anticipating Lamarck by 400 years, but saying that, or more, but he's saying that if the parents have certain emotional traits, that will affect their biology, and that will be passed along to the kid's biology. So he says, bad behavior in Canaan will be passed along to their children.
But it's not necessarily, he's saying biologically, or just like, because they're growing up in that household with bad behavior, so they'll have...
He makes it biology, and the proof is the next line. V'im heyos lavan oved avodas elilim, he says, on the other hand, Lavan is an idolater. That won't be passed along to the kids because that's not an emotional trait. Behavior, ideas, don't get passed down. Emotional attributes do because they affect your biology and that passes to your kid.
He was like a cheater and a liar.
That's part of the problem that I have with this.
Right.
Right. I mean, if he's reading the same Chumash I am, we don't really place any emphasis on Lavan as an idolater. About the only thing, maybe this story with the Trafim. You know, if those Trafim are idols, which, you know, is its own debate.
But he's a liar.
Right. So Lavan's behavior is Dafka corrupt conduct. I don't really follow. I also don't really understand how such traits would be inherited. Again, this is kind of Lamarckian view. You know, unless you're going to say he anticipated epigenetics, You know, and if he did, more power to him. But that's...
There's also a mother involved, right? Like, you could take after either parent, you know, in their nature.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you know,
and environment.
Right.
Or
what is
everything
can
change?
Yeah. So, I don't know. But it's an interesting idea. And like I said, it gets a lot of airtime. So many different Mepharshim love this idea.
But where do they go with your question? Nobody answers?
I have not seen any of them address it. And they all quote it. Like, you can take a look. Barbanel, Kliyakar, like the standard, you know, Mepharshim available, except on Kabbalah.
Levin was also...
Yeah, no, I have not seen any of them address it.
Wow.
Very strange. The last idea is that when you create this family, you are transmitting a bequest. When Yitzchak gets married, Yitzchak's marriage begins the process of realizing Hashem's promise to give Eretz Yisrael to the descendants of Abraham and Sarah. Right? Now there's a new family, now there's going to be a new line. You marry a Canaanite, you warp the bequest in two ways. Number one, Abarbanel's point in number 20. Abarbanel characteristically gives multiple explanations for why he can't marry a Canaanite. So this is one of them. Gam Shakadosh Baruch Hu Ya'ad L'Aseisus Ha'aretz L'Zara'o Shehayim Ibnei Shem. Hashem promised that he is going to give the land to Abram's descendants, who are descendants of Shem, V'sheyischu Rishayim Ibnei Kanan Mimena, and to remove the wicked Canaanites therefrom, right? Either they become Geri Toshav or they are gone. V'imhaya Yitzchak Nosei Isham Ibnos Kanan Hayu Ha'yershim Ha'aretz Kanaanim. Well, you marry a Canaanite, now the Canaanim have a share in the land. And therefore, he said, don't marry a Canaanite. That's a Barbanel in one way. And then the flip side from Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor, who's one of the authors of the Tosfos. He's from that period. And he says, Sha'ar achsanaim mitchatnim bivnei ha'aretz kedei she'irash nachla b'makom al yedei nisu'in. He says, people come to a new place, they're foreigners. They marry a local in order to be able to get land. Right? By marriage, they will have a share. Kamosha Asa Esav. Esav did that. Sheyarash Har Seir Al Yedei Oholivama. He marries Oholivama, and thereby he gets Har Seir, because she's from Seir. Aval Ani Eini Tzarech. But Abram says, I have no need to do that. Sharei Nasan Yakadosh Baruch Hu Esaretz. God gave me the land. I don't need to marry a Canaanite. Marrying a Canaanite would make it look like the reason why we get the land is because you marry a local.
Why is marrying lesser than fighting? And how does Abram know that he's going to have to fight for it?
It's not lesser than fighting, it's lesser than God giving it to him.
Yeah, but the bottom line is he has to fight for it. He didn't just walk in and, like, everybody's scattered.
No, that's true. But he wants the claim to the land to be, in the same way that he doesn't want Melech Sodom to say, Ani Hesharti Es Abram, right? He doesn't want any Canaanite to say, yeah, sure, Yitzchak gets a share in the land because he married a Canaanite.
Okay, but now everybody's saying, well, sure, he got the land because he fought for it.
Right.
Oh,
well,
fight for it.
In Abraham's mind, it's going to be he got the land because God made him successful. God promised it to him and helped him along the way. Right, that would be the way that they look at it. I understand what you're saying, but that would be the response. So what we've seen is then, number one, we have the whole racism piece of things and the discussion that yes, there's a belief that there are biological traits, but what you're not able to do is assume negative biological substance, so to speak. You can't say that because you're from this race, you were somehow inferior. That's where the line seems to be drawn. Then why can't Yitzchak marry a righteous Canaanite, daughter of an Eresh called Mamre? Why can't he marry like that? So one answer is to say, nope, there really is something that's different about them, or we're Canaan. Radak's answer. Second answer, Hashem said, I want you to marry someone from your family, because Hashem has in mind that it's going to be Rivka. Rivka is special. A third approach is to say it's not about the race, it's about the behavior influencing, whether her behavior right now, or whether her family, by living in proximity, the Kliyakar. And then you have these three other ideas, that it's about what you're creating with this marriage. You're creating a stable home, and you want people who are going to have a good rapport, the Inbei HaGefen idea. You want to perpetuate a nation, and there's a concern that the Canaanim have bad traits that they're going to pass along biologically. Apparently, that's the Ran, and Aram just doesn't. There's the Avodah Zarah. Or the idea that it's about transmitting Israel. that's what has to happen via this marriage. And if you marry a Kenani, you give Kenanim share in the land, and you call into question our identity as people in the land. We become just like the Kenanim instead of people who get it from Hashem. So Rivka ends up serving all three of those goals, looking at those last set of three, right? Number one, there's no strife between Yitzchak and Rivka based on their different backgrounds. They have different perceptives on Yaakov and Esau, perhaps, but no, there's no strife at any point evidenced in the Chumash. Rivka ensures the continuity of the Jewish people. Davka, it works out really well. She's the one who arranges for Yaakov to get the bracha. And via their union, Eretz Yisrael remains within the family of the Jewish people. Thank you very much. We did it.
Yeah.
So I keep wondering about that. I don't think so, because he talks about it being behavior influencing biology. But my big question to him, which he doesn't address, is can the line be broken?
Right.
And that would really determine, right.
You work on your anger management, right. And then therefore it's not.
Right. And now,
not having any children.
Right. And that would determine whether it's really a race-based thing or not. I think that would, to me, right. That would be the answer. I don't know.
But it seems from what he's saying that you better could, or the school could alter it.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not.
In which case, it wouldn't be so racist.
Maybe. Yeah.